Hello. Right, before we begin, I wanted to highlight some key episodes in case you've missed them before, or if this is the first time you're listening, that you can go and check them out after this one. So if you're a mortgage broker, mortgage advisor, work in the mortgage space, I would highly recommend checking out episode number 153 and 154. That was a two-part series on 9 different ways that you can generate mortgage leads. Now, if you work in pensions, investments, and you want to get more pension leads, I would check out episode 159. That was a special all about pensions. If it's bridging that you like, that you're what you're into, that you want to get more of those kind of inquiries, check out episode 160. And if it's equity release and you want to get more inquiries for that, check out episode 161. Right, enjoy the show. Hi, heroes. This is Alex Curtis coming at you. I just wanted you to know that the Advisors Assemble podcast has always been and always will be a reflection of the world right outside our window. That world may change and evolve, but the one thing that will never change is the way that we tell our stories of heroism. If you didn't get that, that was a Marvel reference, that was Stan Lee quote, you know, Advisors Assemble, Avengers Assemble, all that. But I want to welcome you to the Business Superheroes series, where I interview some incredible heroes that change the world, or I've got the potential to change the world, or change the world of lots of individuals. And I think they've got something that could really help you and your business and help you grow. So I really want you to buckle up, sit down, enjoy the ride, because I have got a spectacular guest who I'm going to introduce right now. Hello and welcome back to the Advisors Assemble podcast. And we have got the most French person ever on the pod. Not the most French person ever, but the most French person that has featured on the podcast. There's possibly more French people in the world. Pascal Fintoni, how are you doing?
Very good, thank you very much. I mean, in fact, if you want to go the true form, I am 80% French and 20% Italian.
Oh, okay. Well, still... Yeah, still 80% more than potentially anyone else that's been on the podcast. So all good, all good. Wow. So we were just saying off air, it feels like 5 minutes ago that I saw your talk at the Upreneur conference, but it's been like 2 years, and that was like the last sort of big conference that you went to or like spoke at?
Completely and foolishly, like many people, I thought this is it. This is launching my career as a public speaker, because yeah, it was such a highlight. And for me, it was such a privilege to be able to talk about my passion about visual storytelling and what you can learn to bring this into your practices as a content marketer. And I wanted to do more, Alex. And of course, like everybody else, I've become one with my chair, doing mostly video calls and webinars.
Absolutely. I bought a new chair at the start of lockdown. It's getting tatty already. And it wasn't a cheap one. I think it's like so much usage of just like literally every day. So have you done lots of like online stuff like webinars and sort of virtual conferences and talks, or how's it gone?
Completely. I mean, I will say my customers, which are primarily the UK government and local authorities who provide business support programs, but also my kind of one-to-one consultancy clients, we flipped very, very quickly to online. Mm. Now, for me, it was just simply switching on all the kit that I've bought and amassed over the years and setting up my studio, which has been pretty, really good. And in fact, as that extended to me giving advice about how to actually present and how to behave on camera, which was also very new for so many of my contacts.
Oh, I bet. Because it is, well, but it's a strange one, because I always did like client meetings and calls from kind of like Zoom or Google Meet. Anyway, it was rare because we didn't have like local clients. It would have been a nightmare going to Newcastle, London, like so we were sort of used to it. But I know a lot of our listeners as well, a lot of them did all like face-to-face appointments before. And you sort of take it for granted now, probably, because we're quite a way into it, that actually there's like a new kind of skill set, isn't it? Because like, as soon as you put a camera in front of you, you go a bit wooden, don't you? Like, especially the first time.
I think it's only natural, and people shouldn't feel guilty if they find the whole business of video calling and video presentation tricky, because I think naturally for most of us, humility plays a part in how we behave in life, and being under the spotlight is not what we normally would choose to do. But I was reflecting on this with our good friend Roger Edwards, and I think what has happened is that there's been a convergence of public speaking, video production, and event management. You know, the three disciplines have come into one, whether you're running a webinar, a virtual conference, or simply facilitating a panel discussion or a business meeting. You've got to be heard well, you've got to be seen well, you've got to do a number of things that are there to avoid what's been called now Zoom fatigue. And there's a lot to think about, and then add on to that the tech and so on. So yeah, it's been good fun to share what you and I have taken for granted for quite some time now.
Absolutely. And then, so you've touched on kind of what you do and who you do it for. And then I do remember really enjoying your talk, because I'm a film geek as well, and there were so many references to yes. films. And in fact, you're with Roger, who's been on the show a couple of times, you do like a podcast with him, don't you? And there's lots of film references. So you're like and you've talked about visual storytelling. Is that if someone says, what's your thing, Pascal? Is it like video, visual?
Yeah, I can't believe my luck. I still think that someone's going to find me out one day and call me out thinking, hang on a minute, this guy has found a way to talk about his passion about filmmaking and visual storytelling and shoehorn it into business development and content marketing. Busted. I'm going to be chased. Yeah, I'm going to be chased out of the village, you know, by villagers with forks and torches. And I think for me, happily, it's been the convergence of media with regard to the internet and the consumption of video content. And my role is to do things, really, is to help my customers avoid what I call under communication. That is to say, they have chosen to communicate about the internet, but actually they still leave too many things out of the communication efforts. And back to your point, actually, Alex, if people were to meet my customers face to face, that conversation would be richer in stories, in emotions, in honesty than usually the online version. So I use storytelling first, saying to avoid under communication, and then I add the visual element, because of course it's been engaging audiences for more than a century. And then you're absolutely right, and then I make links with famous films, famous scenes, but I also dissect them and explain why it was shot that way or why it was cut that way, once again to convey the message properly. And I just can't believe my luck, frankly.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we during lockdown, actually, I did film production at uni. That was like my thing at university. And then a couple of my uni mates, during lockdown, we would catch up on a Friday night. So we'd do like a Friday night drinks, obviously, at home. And the thing that we did was we would pick our favourite scenes from movie and film, and then we'd watch them together and then do nerdy chat about them. But now we're having to come up with all these weird, like, concepts, because you kind of do all your top scenes, and it's like best use of audio, or like best comedy, or something like that. And we're running out of topics and starting to repeat stuff. Or not sure. Or did we do the music one? I love like growing up watching films. How many films have you got in your top five? Because I've got about 18.
Don't ask me this kind of questions. We had to downsize, so I had to pretty much donate or sell my DVD collection, Blu-ray collection. So half of it is gone, but I still have just under 500, so should be all right. And it would be impossible for me to give you my top five. But going back to the podcast with Roger, I mean, the one segment that we do at the end, as you know, is film marketing. So not only do we learn about how to engage an audience and tell a story by looking at films, but some of the marketing campaigns to promote those films and secure sales and so on have been truly innovative. And I've discovered clever ways to go viral by looking at how a film is marketed. So I started about 5 years ago, nervously thinking, that's not going to work. You know, this is too far into the entertainment world. Mm. And the expectation might be that because I'm here to help someone market themselves and sell more, they're going to not see the connection. But it has worked. And I think it's because, of course, it is rare to meet somebody that's not enjoyed at least a film or two.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think more and more now, you see people on LinkedIn using video, social media. I think people, it's not, I don't think now is a case of that this is something, I think people know they should do it, but I think a lot of people still don't. And I don't know, I mean, I used to have the LinkedIn fear, that like that fear of being judged, and then somehow I got rid of it. I don't know. But also now I'm struggling with time. So there's always like something kind of in the way. Do you talk about that with your
clients? Extensively. So with regard to the fear of being judged, the way to actually flip it is I start by talking about not video marketing, but video customer service. So the message for me is those who are going to watch the video know you, trust you, and love you already. And you are adding value to that existing relationship. And that's a lovely way to start, because therefore for my customers, the mindset is, oh, great. Those who are already happy with me and my services and so on are going to smile even more, because they're going to get a video message or a tutorial or whatever it is that we do. Sometimes we do like maybe a once a year film, you know, like a quarter of an hour story to wrap up the year or even start the year, which is meant to be quite inspirational and so on. Mm-hmm. So you start with that, and that really, really calms nerves. And then you can move on to from video customer service to video marketing. And with regard to time, I think it's a mindset again. Mm. Because once you have scripted and storyboarded a story that you can't wait to produce, you'll find the time. And I think for me, therefore, is there's still element of video marketing, and therefore it's bigger brother content marketing, which still remains a bit of a chore, a bit of a task to kind of get rid of as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. Because people have not found either their voice, they've not found their style. That's true of writing, by the way. That's true of any form of content. So the time thing is where you're find, you know, almost like behaving like an indie filmmaker. If you really, really want to tell the story, nothing will stop you. You'll find the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that maybe needs to align with the kind of the reason why you do your business as well. It's like not to make money. It's like if you're a mortgage broker, for example, it is to help as many people as possible make the right decision or get the home of their dreams. And then when it's tied into that, then it's like, well, to do that, if I need to use video to reach that goal, and making money and doing deals is a byproduct of that, then I suppose you're more likely then to get it if it's your absolute life's mission to make sure no one and gets the wrong deal or sits on the wrong deal.
That's it.
Then you'll do it.
I use that on occasion. I use that this idea. Well, whilst you're still waiting or hesitating to make that video, there are people out there making video content who is misleading your lovely customers, and you've got to find that back. You know, you've got to get in there.
Absolutely, absolutely. Cool. Right. Okay. So, my favorite part of every interview is the guessing what facts are true or not. So, you've got three for me. One of them is true. So can we start with number one? And I don't know you that well, so I'm going to be trying to pull out a lie from you. So I'm going to be listening very intently. But if I can have the first one, I like to win.
My very first fact for you is I won a dance competition in France in the 1990s.
Ooh, so how old? Well, yeah, I should never ask. But am I okay? roughly, how old were you in the 90s?
The 90s, I was in my mid-20s, wasn't I? Yeah.
Oh, okay. What sort of dance was it? Like, ballet, like ballroom or like...
It was actually, I was invited to choose the track, so I went for my hero, Prince.
Okay.
And from memory, I danced on Kiss.
Nice. Okay. Well, that doesn't seem too far-fetched. So that's a possibility. So let's have the next one.
The next one is actually later arrived in the UK, and I got lost in London for entirely because I had the wrong A to Z. It was not London, it was Liverpool.
I can't imagine that being true. You're far too clever for that.
Thank you very much.
But I love this idea of you going up to someone and saying, what were you trying to find? Was it like?
Oh, I was trying to find what I used to call at the time at Leicester Square.
Leicester Square.
Yeah. So I did get, people obviously understood what I was looking for, but yeah, I did struggle.
It's not in Merseyside. Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. Let's have the third one.
So because of my passion for film, I've been involved, I've been attending premieres and so on and so forth. And years later, I met my childhood hero, Jackie Chan.
Do you know what? Jackie Chan has been mentioned before in one of these segments. We've had someone that lived down the road from him. All of these could be true. But I'm gonna go with the first one. I think you won the dance competition. Just the way you answered the follow-up questions.
Okay, that is correct. I did win the dance competition, and the prize was a bottle of Malibu, which was that very sickly drink that people used to love in the 90s.
Yeah, no, yeah. Where has Malibu gone? And what did he have it? Because it's like coconutty, isn't it? Isn't it like?
It is, yeah. So,
Malibu and Coke,
in my case, I was mixed it with pineapple juice. So here's the thing. So I'm dancing away, nearly kind of breaking my spine in the process of trying to imitate Prince. And then I win the bottle free. Yeah. But then I have to pay a fortune to get the pineapple juice to mix it up with.
I love that. I love to go all that effort to get a drink I probably didn't want, and then got to pay for. So yeah, someone's maybe a good business person on the other end of that competition.
Maybe
yeah.
It's an allegory for life. You know, there's always something around the corner. But just for you and viewers, listeners, should I say, all three stories are true.
Ah, you did a Bob Gentle on me.
I did.
I thought you might. And Bob was the one that lived down the road from Jackie Chan as well. So
did he?
So now, wow. So in future, if Jackie Chan is mentioned, it means that all of them are true. So next time anyone mentions him, I'll go, oh, they're all, you're doing a Bob and a Pascal on me. Excellent. Right. Okay. So this is our business superhero series. And yeah, I felt, you know, from that talk, because I sort of knew of you before Youpreneur, and I remember speaking to Roger, and Roger was like, I'm only really going to see my friend Pascal, because Roger spoke the year before, and then there was, I think, Pete Everett and Bob Gentle. I think they'd had you on podcasts and things like that.
That's right.
But I never spoke to you, but I really, really did enjoy that talk. And so for that reason, I believe you're a superhero. But what is your superpower?
It took a very long time to discover my superpower, which is often the case, isn't it? And it took others to point it out to me. I'm going to say my superpower is time travel. And let me explain what I mean by that. In the world of online marketing, online customer service, and in my case, really visual storytelling, I have a clear, clear vision about where we have come from. Mm-hmm. Why we are where we are and where we're going. I can't explain how it is possible, but I have a line of sight that is almost three decades. And I have this ability, I'm not sure how I do it, but to be both nostalgic and futuristic at the same time. And in a way, when around me, people sometimes get a bit excited or they get enthused about a new discovery, I can't share the same sense of excitement and wonderment because I know exactly why it's happening because of something that happened 5, 10, 20, 30 years ago. And equally, I also know that it's going to get even more exciting 5 years' time because I have this ability to foresee the better version or the better execution of what people are looking at now.
So my mind has just blown. And I'm glad I've got the next question of how it makes the world a better place. Cause I'm like, do you incorporate this in work, in life?
Oh, completely. And it began really much later in my career. So, I mean, I've been involved with the world of, you could say, tech and the internet for give or take 30 years. And there's 10 years as an employee doing my bit to support my employers, 10 years for government and 10 years for my own business. It's kind of interesting how it split. Mm. And my role really has been about encouraging people to adopt new practices, which would be supported by new technologies. Sometimes it was even before the internet, you know, computers and so on and so forth. And when there is resistance, when there is hesitation, or whether it's just simply people are not sure, it's because they just don't have a sense of origin and the sense of direction. So, you know, you may remember vaguely in the younger days when suddenly a new bit of computer was plonked on the desk, or a new bit of software was adopted by management without any explanation as to why and where we're going with that. So what I do with my customers, I help them make sense of what they're about to use, which is new to them, because I can share the stories which have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And even sometimes the end is to be continued, you know, because I said, you're doing this today, but let me tell you, in 2 years' time, when you're really getting the full value of the investment, it's going to blow your mind. And the story that I tell, therefore, bring about clarity, which in turn then builds confidence. Oh, okay, that makes more sense to me. And even though that's not my industry to be worried about the tech and the internet, maybe I work in farming, maybe I run a small shop, maybe I sell cars. Doesn't matter. But it builds the confidence thinking. Logic, Alex, is so, so important, and for things to be plausible in someone's mind. But what is happening in the industry at large, you know, the tech and the internet industry, people have been stripped of all those stories. So they don't realize that the reason why, for example, Facebook is so popular is because of the early forums in the 80s and 90s. Mm. The reason why Clubhouse did what it did is because of the indie radio stations, sometimes breaking the law, you know, from the 80s. So you've got all that stuff going on. So when you build confidence, then ultimately you make the world a better place because individuals and businesses make the right decisions calmly, and they do so from an informed position.
Okay. Yeah, no, absolutely makes sense. So you said you needed other people to point it out to you and you only discovered it later on. But talk me through that when you realized.
So I've got two friends, Anne English and Beth Hewitt, who talked about whispers. So they talk about superpowers and they talk about your calling. Mm-hmm. And they say the world will whisper to you. And if you ignore it long enough, then they will shout at you, you know, saying, you're doing all this wrong and you're not applying yourself the way you should be doing. So for me, there were three events. The first event was 96, when I was part of a team building the very first website for a famous tool operator. And I remember being part of the team and people were just getting themselves quite busy and flustered about building websites. I mean, in the 90s, people didn't know what they were doing. Mm. But I could already tell that the way they were approaching it was wrong, because essentially what they were trying to do back in the days, Alex, was to take the brochure that used to be in the shelves of travel agents and copy and paste that into a virtual version. And I was trying to communicate, but I was a little young at the time. I didn't have the vocabulary and necessarily the guts, you know, to go for it, saying, do you know, the brochure shouldn't be the inspiration. The inspiration should be the conversation that our customer is having every day with the staff in the call center. And maybe the website needs to be a replica of that. And so that was the first whisper. The second whisper was when I changed industry and I was tasked with building an e-commerce website. And again, I was with the tech team and the sales team and the management team. And the conversation they were having was still around this idea, well, we have a brochure with a price list. Let's do the same. And people can pay using WorldPay, I think at the time was. And I was like, do you sure that seems a little too kind of black and white? And where is the human element? But the real deciding factor was I was invited to speak at a conference in the late 90s. And it was a big, big conference. I mean, we had Cisco, you had IBM, you had all the big names, and then little me. That at the end of the day, having listened to all these amazing kind of tech companies shuffling on stage talk about search engine optimization. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. And I just described plainly what we were doing at work. And I told the story of, well, the reason is because this is where we've come from, this is where we're here, and this is where we're going. And I kind of finished my presentation. And the host, you know, the kind of the compere at this conference said, he came to see me at the end and said, I know you were very, very nervous, but let me tell you one thing. You are the only speaker that made any sense that day and the only one where people were taking notes.
Yeah, wow.
And there I realized that I wasn't wrong in thinking differently to the majority, which I think is always a little unnerving because you find yourself exposed thinking, why am I the only person in the room thinking differently, not like everybody else? I must be the guy thinking that, you know, the wrong way. And so having some confidence in your own abilities, but also embracing not just simplicity, but also this idea of story, which is a beginning, a middle, and an end. And if you share that, people just get it and they get excited.
Yeah, makes sense. Cool. So every superhero has a guide. You know, you're Yodas, if you like. I'm sure there must have been some people that have helped you sort of get where you are. I mean, we talked off air about your, you know, good friend Chris, but are there any others or someone that we've never heard of before, or maybe someone famous, or are there other people?
Do you know, it's interesting because when I think about where I am now and those who have guided me from whispering to shouting at me, I think there's certainly some individuals that come through. So very, very quickly, I must thank my first English teacher to give me a love for the language that got me to want to come and live in the UK, even though I got lost in London for an entire day because I had the wrong guide. I think my parents gave me a very strong work ethics, which I think still stay with me in terms of working hard and all the kind of wonderful business etiquette that I still have to this day. But I would argue maybe my very first boss when I worked in travel, Andy Tidy, I was there maybe 2 years, but what a guy. And he taught me about being curious and checking facts for yourselves and not just taking, you know, the headline for granted. And although there was still, you know, the early days of the internet, you know, we did very, very little, I think that served me well to just be curious, but in a good way, not in terms of trying to catch people out, but thinking, yeah, I'm curious about why this is happening, you know, where does it come from, where is it going? And he was so, so keen on customer service, but customer satisfaction. And I think he instilled that in me, which is, you know, we're doing all this for a reason, not just for the joy of using the tech. And really, his point of view was, can we make sure that the customer is smiling before, during, and after the interaction with us? And then I've had many others, you know, great managers as well as poor one, which I think is important as well to distinguish the good, bad, and the ugly. But I'm just very lucky because I'm aware that for many others working in marketing and sales, they've not always had that first positive experience, which, you know, the formative years when you get that first job, Alex, I'm sure you'll agree, they're so, so important. And if it can be a positive experience, it just makes all the difference.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm trying to think of positive experiences. My first job was a head of ceramic cleansing at a pub. Head of. My colleague was head of stainless steel cleansing. Absolutely. I think definitely, like, I think it's a common theme. And with that question, there are some people at work, like bosses, who, like, unsung heroes, if you like. That,
correct. Yeah.
They probably don't even realize. And they're like, well, that's what I do with everyone, sort of thing.
And then just to close very quickly, on the visual storytelling element of my life, then I have to go for Steven Spielberg, of course.
Yeah, he was referenced quite a lot in that talk.
He was indeed.
On our movie chat night things, there was one actually. Oh, so we had one theme where it was like dinner table scenes, and it's the Jaws one where the kids imitating the dad. Just like little things like that he's so good at. But yeah, it's like amazing. You can watch a Spielberg film and just know it's him just from like character introductions and things like that. He is amazing. He's good. I'm more of a Christopher Nolan man though. He's
I can see that. Yeah, yeah, I understand. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
well, yeah. Advisors Assemble, Batman, everything. Yeah, I was so excited. Well, it was Memento. Well, yeah, it was Memento. From him first, and then I bought the film that he made on his own. It's called The Following or something like that. And then I cannot tell you how excited I was when he was announced doing Batman Begins. That was at university then. And no one else, everyone else was like, meh. I was like, Christopher Nolan from Memento, he's going to do Batman. It's going to be amazing. Cool. Right. Okay. Oh, interesting question. What is your kryptonite?
Ooh. So the way I'm hearing this question is around this idea of, you know, losing almost all my capacity and superpower. I'm going to go for rudeness. So if I am, in life and at work, if I am in a presence of people who are rude and lacking, you know, almost a sense of others and so on, I've got to deal with them. I have been known.
Is that your 20% Italian mafia start coming out?
Probably. And for me, in terms of our conversation, where I get very, very quickly very, very unhappy is around the lies and deceit that do exist, sadly, in the world of digital marketing, e-business, e-commerce, and more, where there are people. So some of them are innocent. They believe they're giving the right advice, but they are completely wrong or outdated. Mm-hmm. And others are downright criminals, where they know for a fact that they are sharing a pack of lies, but they're getting on with it because, yeah, they will get some people to fall victim of that and spend some money. So for me, the rudeness is that, which is that idea of lack of respect, lying, not listening to the others and so on. And I've seen my fair share of bad behavior, you know, across my life and professional life. And this is the one thing where I would stop whatever I'm doing and I would have to just, go for a resolution. Usually using communication skills, just in case people are wondering.
No horses' heads in beds. No. That is good to know. I think, I think the rudeness is, I think, is I'm an introvert and I don't like confrontation. So it's luckily in terms of what, well, do you know what, actually, when it's, I find, it's very rare. I've probably had two kind of business calls where I've just been like, look, I'll just stop. We're wasting each other's time. And then you can hang up and they go. But I don't know how I deal with it in person. I probably just polite and nod, and slag them off behind their back, possibly.
I've been wondering whether to do with age, I'm either becoming bolder or less anxious about it, but I will now tell people if they are lying or misleading others, and certainly in the case of proper rudeness, you know, of in my case as a trainer, for example, you will have people who are just maybe a little too, you know, excited or passionate, and they would cut people off, or they would be quite overbearing about their views or positions, and I would try and manage that. But for me, the real one that bothers me a lot is are the lies and deceits, whereby, yeah, there is a whole kind of substrata of our industry who are just out there to make money by just selling the wrong things for the wrong reason, and sometimes selling things, services and products that don't work at all or are not appropriate.
Yeah, I do not follow anyone really. So my thing is about just getting close to the customer, the client, and getting to know them. So I don't, it's kind of like a haze to me what else is going on. So rightly or wrongly, I don't look at what other people are doing in marketing, or because I don't want to be influenced subconsciously or not. So I don't, literally everyone, all of my feeds are all advisors, whether it be pensions, like finance, pretty much. And then the odd friend. And I do, but I suppose I do know it's going on. And I suppose I feel like things like the podcast here, we can get the right people on and give the right advice. And that can be a beacon, if you like, that could say enough that if they're not on here, they're not worth listening to. I suppose that's a bit. But yeah, I don't. Do you know what? I don't think about it too much. But it is. There are lots of cowboys, and every sales call that I have, everyone's always been burnt before.
Correct.
A lot of it goes on.
Yeah. And that's what I hear, which is why I'm aware of it. And once you start to look into it, it's quite something. And you're right. You know, you, myself, and you know, the community at large, we need to at least be on par in terms of the visibility and the level of noise, if I may use that term, because at the moment it's the wrong information, the wrong advice that is getting through. And then, you know, of course, I think part of the blame goes with the algorithm and more, but we need to continue what we're doing, and it will reach the right people at the right time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, coming back to why you do what you do and why others should do more of it is if you are annoyed, because I know there are a lot of people in our community, a lot of listeners, they will. The money saving expert guy, I forgot his name now. He was talking about mortgages the other day, and a lot there were some brokers that agreed, some that didn't. This sort of modern day, there's plenty of platforms for you to have your voice that you can, like, rather than waiting for someone else to say something you don't agree with, you can create your own platform. You know, a YouTube channel. There's people with really strong YouTube channels that loads of people see it. And that's that can be your battle against it. It comes back to the kind of the visual storytelling, really. If you do that,
absolutely,
create this platform, and then you can have your voice and do it for the right reasons, rather than just getting annoyed with everyone else. It's sort of your defense, I suppose, isn't it?
So essentially, we don't want to be like our parents shouting at the TV and then living as that. You know. And to your point, though, Alex, if you are reacting and thinking, I disagree, and for all the right reasons, then it's almost a trigger. It's maybe the whisper you need to go, right, let me commit to writing an article about it, or recording a podcast, or putting together a video, because I am concerned that that message, which is probably outdated or incorrect, is going to reach my customers and they're going to go down the wrong path.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you think sometimes when you're reacting, it can... I'm trying to think of the right word. You don't want to come across as bitter, do you? So I think as well, if you're giving your message rather than saying, oh, don't listen to so-and-so, I suppose if you've got to get the balance right in terms of if you're maybe take a breath before you do a video, a live broadcast, seeing something you don't agree with, I'm guessing, is like...
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think the trigger is right. There is something that I can explain my way, which for the right audience would be better, clearer, would build confidence and allow them to take the right action. And you're going to go in and tell your story your way. And by which time you've already perhaps forgotten, you know, the comment made by the other individual or the other party. I guess that must be true of any creators where I've learned on quite a few filmmaking courses, I'm sure you have as well. There was one advice that stayed with me, this idea of, so you are busy maybe planning your film or your story, whatever. And of course, you know, it's not just all work, you've got to play as well. So maybe you're going to go and see a film. And in that film, you're going to go, oh, do you know, that's pretty good. That's better than what I want to do. Let me emulate or literally borrow that idea. And the tutor was saying, that's you misunderstanding your feelings. What you're doing here, you're recharging your batteries, but being taken care of by another storyteller. So you go and sit in the movie, you enjoy Chris Nolan, and you leave the cinema, I think, feeling re-energized to get on with your project, your way, using your voice. And I think that's the hardest thing in business as well as in life, which is to really understand your feelings and what they're telling you, because they're so close to your line. It's hard to, you know, between jealousy and whatever, you know. So for me, that also comes with practice, whereby eventually, very much like you get on with your content effort. You celebrate the work of others, but you don't feel and don't allow their work to influence your voice. Otherwise, God forbid, we'll have a very monotone and monochrome internet if we already copied each other.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Cool. Right. So gadgets, do you have your own sort of like Batman utility belt of gadgets, whether it be, you know, something on your phone, WhatsApp or an app or
yeah,
something? I'm sure you do. Yeah.
I mean, if I think about things that, if they were to disappear or if I lose them, if they were to break, I would just feel very, very exposed. Well, to begin with, as you know, I've got to wear a waistcoat at work. So and I have a very extensive collection, so I'm covered. But in terms of the app, back to accessing the right news at the right time and so on, I use this curation app on my phone called Flipboard. And if you've come across that before, and it's called Flipboard because to kind of scan through the news, you flip, you know, you kind of use your finger and you go from bottom to top of the screen and you flip like a little pad back in the days of being a journalist. Mm-hmm. And the good thing about Flipboard, using keywords and a bit of AI, you can really specialize and create channels. So you can have a channel on, let's say, SEO. You can have a channel on social media, in my case, internet marketing, filmmaking, and you can therefore plan your day around, right, this is my time to go and curate and maybe use that for my own work or to share on. And the other thing that they've done recently, which is why it would be very upsetting if they were to close it, you can then embed your magazines, as they are called, onto your website. So then I'm able to say to my customers, if you're wondering about the wonders of, you know, fill the blank, you might find that I have a Flipboard magazine on my website with my favorite articles, podcasts, and videos. So I've done the curation bit for you. And you'll know that these are kind of pre-approved and vetted bit of content. So Flipboard is one that I would miss enormously if they were to disappear. The other one is around video editing. Now, I'll be the first one to admit that I can take great pleasure spending an entire night editing just 1 minute of footage to get it perfect, but sometimes it's just not appropriate, particularly for more disposable content. Mm-hmm. So I am very, very fond of this mobile phone app created by GoPro called Quik, spelled without a C, Quik. Mm-hmm. And it uses AI to edit your videos automatically. So if you've been to an event, or it could actually be photography, and you have access to templates, copyright-free music, and AI. And within milliseconds, you have a fully edited video, and you can go in and change a few things to your liking. But for the speed of execution, it's something quite exceptional. Very quickly, the one that I couldn't do without, or that would really be tricky, I've got an app on my laptop called Audio Hijack. And Audio Hijack is a software that can really help you give that finish, that nice polish to your audio recording. And you can record from different sources. I've got it plugged into my Rodecaster Pro, but literally you could record a Zoom call, or you could record a, you know, this conversation, and just give it that that nice finish, just to make it sound better. I've got also an app called Squoosh with two O's, Squoosh.app. Now, strangely, this is a Google app, but they kept it independent, and it allows you to compress photos at light speed. So if you're working fast, maybe updating your website, or in my case, uploading videos on YouTube with a thumbnail, then Squoosh allows you to do all sort of things, such as compressing and resizing and so on very, very quickly. I'll finish off very quickly on two things. Music. Music to me is so important. I use it sometimes just to motivate me in terms of my own editing. I'm sure you're the same, to a point, Alex. And I'm always looking for music that is obviously clear in terms of copyright, but it also has that nice cinematic feel. And there is a website called CC Mixter, so the letter C from Charlie, ccmixter.org. And these are indie music composers who have kind of given their music tracks for free in exchange of a credit note on at the end of a production. So that's really nice. And then on occasion, I've got to translate things from French to English and back and forth. And to help me out, I use lingui.com. And it's brilliant. It's an online dictionary with a bit more to it. And again, these are the ones that if they were to disappear, I would be stuck, frankly.
I love it. Well, you've gone to town on the gadgets, which is amazing. Every single one I've not used or heard of. So I've literally, as you were chatting, I was like, right, I'm just opening that one. I'm opening that one. Brilliant. Squoosh. I've never heard of. And then it's one of these things that, because I know Photoshop and I've done some photography and stuff, I can do, if I need an image doing like quickly, but as our team sort of grows, like little things like that, that they can then just, if there's an image for the website or whatever that they, and it's one of our account managers maybe, so they don't need to get the dev team to do it or whatever. And I imagine our listeners who, you know, they're just, you know, if they're doing stuff themselves, just dropping that in, because that is sometimes a massive, especially with your website, having images that are too heavy, even just because you know I think Shutterstock has a thing now with an editor, but even when you do the right sizes, they still come out quite big file sizes. So I'm keen on that, and I love their website. They've got like the transparent background. They've done it as the Photoshop transparent thing, like the chessboard type thing. Yeah, cool. What about reading? Do you, as a big film man, do you spend more time? I presume you spend more time watching than you do reading. But do you read books as well? Is there any?
Not much. Which I think, you know, is probably my blind spot, and I should read more. If I'm going to read anything, it sounds so nerdy. I read about film, or I read a screenplay, or things like this. But I do read an enormous amount of articles every week, either for myself or for the podcast and so on. But I would say that the books that left an impression on me was probably a long time ago when I was reading more than I am now. And the one that comes to mind would be The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho, if you know that one. And yeah, it's an easy read, and it's not particularly, well, it is actually life-changing, because it, as a young professional, it just arrived on my desk at the right time, you know, in terms of making sense of a number of things. And it's a lovely parable about life in general, but also your vision, you know, sense of direction, family, sacrifice, and so on. So it's great. And in fact, I sometimes use the term content alchemist to describe what I do, because of the, you have to bring different disciplines to the fore for your reputation management to work. And then the second one, where it helped me understand the world of business better, is Losing My Virginity by Richard Branson. And again, at the right time. I'm sure there are better books since then, but it's about, you know, life stages and so on. And maybe a close second would be How I Made 100 Movies in Hollywood and Never Lost a Dime by Roger Corman. Because it tells a story, Roger Corman, a film producer, it tells a story of making so many different movies and launching so many careers, in fact, and always doing it in such a way that it was never in the red, which is, it's quite interesting about negotiation, networking, and squeezing value, but also that kind of proper indie filmmaking where he would be making a film that looked like $1 million. He only cost him $1,000. But how did he do it? So there's a lot of lessons in there about being very ingenious and practical.
Cool. Very cool. Love it. So, we mentioned your, the podcast show that you do with, Roger. So can you tell us about that? And then you also do, on your LinkedIn, you kind of share what you've been reading, and you share like other articles and things like that as well. So, so I know to follow you on LinkedIn for that, but tell us about the details of the show that you do.
So the show with Roger Edwards, had a very long gestation. I mean, we spoke about it for the better part of 2 years before launching it. And it was all about this idea of, we would ring each other to catch up and talk about movies. And then in the process, put the world of marketing and online marketing to right. And at the end of each conversation, we used to say to each other, we should have recorded this, you know, and that went on for like forever. And then when the pandemic kind of struck and we were all stuck at home and we had more time, in my case, by not traveling, I've reclaimed so much time for the week and the weekend. So there was that, but also boredom was starting to kind of seep in. And I said to Roger, well, shall we do it? And we probably thought it will do some episodes. We didn't realize that we'd be doing it now for a year and 2 months down the line. And we wanted to push ourselves in terms of production. We also wanted to reflect the conversation we have. So we use segments, which would be familiar to many of your listeners. So the first segment is in the news, or the kind of news headlines that help us reflect and react to what it means to be a business in 2021, 2022. Then we do what's called the content spotlights, where we deep dive into an article, a podcast, or a video. We then share some tech that can make life easier as a content creator and reputation management leader. Then we talk about this week in history. So that was my contribution to the deal. I said we must look back of this idea of where have we come from. So this week in history is a lovely segment where we talk about, for example, the very first typewriter, which has obviously the basis for the fact that we still use the same keyboard hundreds of years later. Yeah. You know, I've got all the first DVD production, you know, the first Walkman. So we look at all that to explain where we are today. Then we do the what we call the content creator shout out. So we love to celebrate the work of others, particularly newcomers in the world of podcast, blogging, and video. And we wrap the podcast with probably the highlight for Roger and I, which is film marketing. And we study the marketing campaign of films. And frankly, we've done Jaws, we've done Mandalorian, we've done The Goonies, you know, but we also do things like The Dark Knight. We move through all genres and eras. And what has been fascinating is to observe sometime movies that were promoted and sold before the internet had more ingenious marketing campaigns than the one that can be sold in nowadays. But we almost learn all the time, saying that would be useful to a business, let alone the fact that it's a movie. I mean, to this day, I think the best marketing campaign that we've discussed, I think, was both the Blair Witch Project and The Dark Knight.
Nice. Yeah, I remember that huge hype around the Blair Witch Project at the time. Everyone, it was like one of those ones that everyone was talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think with the Blair Witch, what is lovely, it's the idea of very much like a small business, you know, no time, no money, no resources, and yet you get people to talk about your business or your product. And with the Dark Knight, the challenge was, how do you get people enthused again about a character that people perhaps not too well, and what they did with that one, and the viral marketing that they did, which lasted about a year long viral marketing, is quite exceptional.
Yeah, well, obviously close to my heart, the Batman. You've also got YouTube channel as well. Is it the Content Marketing Suite? Is that right?
Yeah, the Content Marketing Studio. So this started 2016, and it was really a reaction to the many questions I was getting from my customers. And I would answer the questions, or I would suggest an article to read, or I would suggest an individual to follow. And I thought, do you know, that one conversation, what a shame that others couldn't hear it, because it may help others. So it began like this, really, a sense of being helpful and useful. So the Content Marketing Studio is interviewing individuals who have found their voice, who have found a way to add value to their community. And we study their journey, and we talk, like you've done, about their practices, about the tech they use, and to be a source of inspiration. And then I've got spin-off series that come out of that, where I wanted to specialize maybe in live video. I was curious as well about AR and VR, so I did a series on that. So I suppose it's back to this idea of I'm curious about something. I'm trying to predict the future as safely as I can, but I don't want to keep those conversations to myself, because that would be just so foolish. And more importantly, those conversations, if they get recorded and published, could be the very antidote that we need to remove doubt and anxieties, and maybe to kind of soften, you know, the noise of the liars and deceiving people out there.
Absolutely. Cool. So I can find everything at pascalfintoni.com, right? And if I
Correct.
Want to get in touch with you about doing some work or just consuming your content, is the, I assume that is that the best place for me to head over?
It's absolutely, it's become the hub where the content is, the services are listed and so on, people can get in touch. And interestingly, again, back to this idea of the whispers. So I do have a limited company. I'm a managing director of a limited company, training and consultancy. And because of my career and my journey, I began by going online and promoting myself under the company name. And when I did the research and I was tracking behavior and traffic, everybody was Googling my name. Mm-hmm. So it was Pascal Fintoni was the search term on Google, nothing else. Yeah. So rather nervously, because that was quite daring back in the days of changing, you know, your URL to who you are. Mm-hmm. I changed it to PascalFintoni.com. Actually, it was my web designer who suggested I should. And frankly, it's been one of the simplest decisions I've made in business, but one of the best in terms of return.
Fantastic. Yeah. No, I think it's one of those things. I think people, there was definitely a point where people didn't know the lead engine, even like clients. They'd be like, who'd you work with? It's like, Alex. Yeah. Yeah. And you see that a lot, actually, when we look at new clients and their website traffic and what people are searching, like the advisors get a lot of search and it's sometimes they're shocked by that, but people buy from people. That's it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, my man, I really enjoyed that. I thank you so much for coming
likewise.
Up. Likewise. And taking the time out and geeking out with me. I do appreciate it. And hopefully we'll get you back in the future and speak to you soon. Hopefully I'll get to see you live again when we get rid of this horrible COVID situation. But you're out. You said you've gotten, you're speaking at an event. Was it next week, did you say?
So next week, yeah, for the first time since it all started, I'll be in a room with 20 local businesses to actually help them plan next year's activities when it comes to content creation. But the webinars are still going strong. Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely. Between now and mid-December, I am online. So this is more the exception than the rule at this moment in time.
Hopefully we'll get back to a point where it is a bit more balanced. But dude, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And I will speak to you soon.
Take care now. Bye, everyone.